Shalom, Chaverim. Baruch haba lechol mekshivim. This is Dr. Duff Forbes, Rabbi Kehilat HaMashiach Betoch Yisrael. Welcome, my friends, to Treasures from Tanakh. My friends, found among the papers of Jefferson after his death were these words: resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. The Exodus narrative begins with the account of the bondage of Israel under a tyrant Pharaoh of Egypt. In these moments we have together, let us follow the stupendous events associated with a resistance so spectacular that it still grips our attention as we re-enter its record today. What a precious deposit archaeology has brought us. Modern findings have abundantly confirmed the reliability and antiquity of the biblical record to such an extent that I am persuaded only the strongest blend of blind prejudice and determined skepticism could withstand its evidence. It seems only yesterday that pride married skepticism and gave to the world its first-born child, pseudo-scholarship. This precocious youngster demanded some toys with which to play. So the great manufacturing firm of speciousness, speculation, and balderdash, Unlimited, provided a beautiful bubble pipe for the bumptious boy. And the bubbles he blew were bewitching, 'tis true, but were as baneful as bacteria in a backwater. One of these soapy sophistries was the suggestion that Chumash, the Pentateuch, the books attributed to Moses, was the product not of the man Moses nor of the age in which he lived, but rather of some writers so late as from the 6th to the 9th century before the Common Era, writers who knew nothing of ancient Egypt nor its culture and customs. It was a beautiful bubble, and many followed it fascinated. But the spade of the archaeologist smote it so severely that it burst, leaving only a watery wash of Wellhausenism which the winds wafted away. Truly, modern archaeology abundantly confirms the biblical descriptions of the customs, conditions, and, yea, the general chronology of the age we are now about to enter together. From discoveries in the royal tombs of Thebes, the city of the dead, we learn that even in ancient Egypt they had their labor troubles, where, either with or without just cause, the workers went on strike at the instigation of their labor leaders. What, you say? Strikes in ancient Egypt? Yes, of course, there's nothing new under the sun. It is therefore feasible to imagine that the Pharaoh of Egypt, at first, thought he had to deal with a couple of labor leaders just bent on making trouble. When Moses and Aaron appeared before him on behalf of Am Yisrael, the people of Israel, a gradual disillusionment on this score must have come to him when the true nature of the controversy dawned upon his mind from the very character of the 10 plagues which smote Egypt as consequence of his stubbornness. For did not the God of the universe declare, "Against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment"? Yes, my friends, it was against the pagan gods of Egypt that the bolts of divine retribution were hurled. Pharaoh and Moses were not the prime parties in this encounter. Behind the human actors, a spiritual drama of major magnitude was being enacted. Demons defending their unlawful possession of human obeisance. Deity affirming the sole right to such worship. Let this important key serve to unlock this contest to our understanding. If you have read the details of the encounter, you will have been impressed with a prominent part played by the rod or staff in all the thaumaturgical activities surrounding Moses, Aaron, and the magicians of Egypt. There is a deep significance in this. Rods, tipped with the heads of the various pagan gods, and named after them, were common, but commanding, features in Egypt. The holy rod of Ammon, the rod of Khnum, the rod of Amun-Ra, are but few among many. This factor even appeared in such Egyptian proper names as Nesparmedu, he who belongs to the holy rod, and is reproduced in the cuneiform script as Ishpi-Matu, from whence undoubtedly we derive the Hebrew word Matei, rod, used in Exodus. Now we see why Moses appears before Pharaoh and his thaumaturgists with Matei ha-Elohim biyado, the rod of God in his hand. See now where the successive blows really strike, as we consider the 10 plagues, the first of which is the blood. The Nile was an idle river, for its waters and certain of its denizens were held sacred and worshipped. Thus was the Nile god humiliated by the plague of blood. Second, the frogs. Hekt, the goddess with a frog head, was divinely exposed in the second plague. Third, the lice. This was a blow directed at Seb, the earth god. The Arav was the fourth plague, and although Josephus and others interpret this Hebrew word as referring to a mixture of creatures, I am persuaded that a careful study of the scriptures will disclose that a single creature is implied, probably a particular type of beetle, which would be interpreted by the Egyptians as a judgment upon the sacred scarabaeus. Fifth, the murrain. This was a pointed shaft of retribution directed towards Apis, the sacred Egyptian bull. Sixth, the boils. Here Typhon, the evil genius, was discomfited, and Egypt's magicians suffered their second defeat. Seventh, the hail and fire. Since hail is practically unknown in Egypt, this judgment directed against Shu, the god of the atmosphere, would have impressed Pharaoh and the Egyptians with a supernatural character of the visitation. Eighth, the locusts. Since the Egyptians paid homage to the god Serapia as the protector from locusts, here was a revealing and severe judgment, exposing the impotence and inadequacy of this pagan deity. Ninth, the darkness. As I prepared this message for you, I had before me the glorious picture in color of the sun-golden faces of the 1,000-foot cliffs beneath which nestled the imposing three-terraced temple of Queen Hatshepsut, the female pharaoh of Egypt, where the sun altar can still be seen, reminiscent of Egypt's ancient worship of Ra, the sun god. This ninth plague of supernatural darkness stripped the deity from Ra and left him blind and groping amidst his deluded devotees. Tenth, the death of the firstborn. This last and most appalling plague, which produced the capitulation of Pharaoh and the liberation of Israel, was piercingly purposive. In no other country was primogeniture so important as in Egypt. The firstborn of the Pharaoh was attributed with divine rank, equal to that of the Pharaoh himself. As Egyptian formula puts it, the firstborn came forth out of the body of the god. When the firstborn ascended the throne, he was given the title Sara-en-Katef. This is the son of Ra from his body. This final judgment, therefore, was thus widespread in its implication. It involved Ra, the sun god. It involved Horus, the god king, and Since the visitation extended to the firstborn of beasts, it involved Apis, the sacred bull, and Hathor, the goddess with the head, horns, or ears of a cow. Surely all Egypt was taught a divine lesson from these miraculous activities. May we today survey them from afar and profit from them here and now. Consider for a moment the two dominant opponents, Pharaoh and Moses. Both these leaders possessed similar qualities. Both were leaders of their respective peoples and multitudes. Both were alike in their courage, Moses to withstand the power and prestige of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh to withstand the magnitude and manifestations of the cumulative visitations imposed upon him. Unusual persistence is another commendable quality shared equally by both. We have already noted it in Moses, but is it not equally obvious in Pharaoh? But here is the real lesson we may humbly ask to learn for current application. With both these men, God was equally patient. Do you remember when God first called Moses? He fought an evasive action against the call and commission of God, advancing all sorts of excuses. How patient God was with him! Yes, towards Pharaoh too, God exhibited that very same patience. My friends, the warmth of the same sun will melt butter, but bake clay. Pharaoh permitted the divine patience to harden him to self-destruction, whilst Moses permitted this gracious quality to melt him to a meekness which was rewarded by such a fullness of the divine presence that Moses wist not that the skin of his face shone. May God bestow upon us all that tendency of heart and willingness of spirit that will reward us all with a shining face from the blessed presence of Moses, his God, your God, my God. Yivarecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'hunecha, Yisar Adonai panav elecha, v'yosem lecha, shalom. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Amen.